there's a negativity, what we call bias, which is we're sort of wired to detect threat. And so we automatically react to difficult and hard things, and hard things are known to stay around longer. We think about them more. They have a larger impact on us. And if we go with that kind of thinking, then we say, well, if that's true, how we can ever be happy?
Welcome to The Lisa Show, where we take a good look at life. Hey, it's Lisa. Do you ever wish it was easier to be grateful? Confession time. There are a few things that I'm not sure I could ever be grateful for. Number one, the gap between the driver's seat and the console in the car. Have you ever dropped something in that crack? You'd have better luck winning the Powerball lottery than retrieving whatever it is you dropped in that 2-centimeter abyss. I mean, we can put people in space, but we can't figure out how to close that gap. Really? Honestly? Number two, chatty servers. I know, that's rich coming from an extrovert. But one night, I ended up hearing all about Trevor's recent breakup and never got the chance to talk to the people I actually came to eat dinner with. If you're my waiter, please just keep the Diet Coke and chips flowing. No heart-to-hearts, please. I mean, besides, Trevor, you were too good for Michaela anyway. A breakup was inevitable. I know that. You know that. It's fine. And number three, the crinkly paper on the doctor's exam table. We're already feeling targeted and vulnerable in the doctor's office. Why do we need to make it worse with crunchy cornflake sound effects? And don't even get me started on having that paper stick to the back of your thighs as if there were two sticks of margarine. So gross. Okay, glad I got that off my chest. But being grateful can be hard. And it's not just in the small things. When life hands us real struggle or sickness or loss, it can feel like gratitude is the furthest thing from our minds. And yet, we keep hearing about gratitude and how good it is for everyone. So that's why I brought my friend Dr. Von Werthen into the studio. Von is the director for the Counseling and Psychological Services at Brigham Young University. He has a PhD in psychology, is a licensed clinical psychologist, and has been a professor and counselor for over 30 years. Von knows a thing or two about the power of gratitude and the practices that can help us get into more grateful space. So today, he's going to tell us what gratitude can do for us and why it isn't just toxic positivity. He'll also give us some simple ideas for finding gratitude in the world and people around us and how to teach it to our kids. You'll also hear some great stories about real people practicing gratitude that will inspire you. It inspired me. So here's Dr. Von Werthen.
I'm Von Werthen, or known by Dr. Werthen, here on campus. And I've been on campus for 34 years. Gratitude has been researched pretty intensely since about 1998. We know that it's highly related to levels of well-being. It improves, and this is probably surprising for some, physical health. So it's found to increase sleep, have better sleep. Immune system can actually be improved. It strengthens relationships, and that's probably an obvious one in many ways. It is related to increases in empathy and forgiveness. It's more likely to be involved in increasing pro-social behaviors like volunteering and service and cooperating, getting along with others. It's a way to help strengthen resilience and deal with difficult circumstances. It's also associated with increased hope and optimism, probably not a surprise. It fosters spirituality. We have a lot of literature that suggests that it can be related to actually church attendance. In psychology terms, we call it transcendence, that ability to sort of see the broader picture and appreciate how things are connected to one another. It's associated with better problem solving and a growth mindset. There's a notion of post-traumatic stress disorder, but some people haven't heard of post-traumatic growth. And post-traumatic growth is that ability to actually have difficult experiences and come out of it on the other end with growth and development. It can help treat cases of mild and moderate depression. I want to make sure severe depression is a different category. There may be a role for discussion of gratitude there as well. But in mild to moderate depression, it's shown to be quite helpful. And then it reduces social comparison, which is probably a surprise. It helps us access positive memories. So if we're in a difficult place and we can begin to feel gratitude, then positive memories might come back.
Dr. Worthen started listing the benefits of gratitude, and they just kept coming. Seriously, he went on for several more minutes. Does gratitude benefit us? Confirmed. And this just reaffirmed why I wanted to do this episode in the first place. Gratitude is definitely part of living a good life. And that's the whole point of this show. And now we return to Dr. Worthen, who is still listing the benefits of gratitude.
Gratitude helps us not to take things for granted. Gratitude soothes and calms. I think it is one of the calming things that happens in our life when we think about it. It's hard to be anxious and grateful.
I want to make a joke and be like, that's it? It just affects everything?
Yeah.
It makes your whole life better in every way? I mean, it really does seem that simple, doesn't
well,
it?
Well, if we sort of apply it believing it's the thing, then I think we probably are missing the point. It's really valued by every religion across the world. There's not a culture that I've encountered that doesn't see gratitude as a virtue. So it's a universally valued kind of virtue. It's easy to think, well, it's just gratitude, you know?
I know, that used to be me. Like, isn't that just the baseline? Shouldn't we all, okay, we'll all be grateful. Also, how can, yeah, I improve my life? You know, like there's no connection, but there
yeah.
is.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
I want to just highlight some of the things Dr. Worthen said. First of all, it's true. Gratitude literally helps everything, from physical health to spiritual health to mental health to relationships. And with that kind of resume, it seems like the easy answer to all of our problems is just be more grateful, right? And while that certainly is part of the story, it's not all of the story. I was particularly concerned in our conversation that some people might mistake being grateful for toxic positivity, you know, where you ignore what you're experiencing and feeling to force yourself into a facade of happiness. Well, here's what Dr. Worthen had to say.
I appreciate that kind of critique of it. I've been pondering and thinking a lot about that mix of emotions. I recently been thinking about, can we have faith and doubt at the same time? And I think, yes, I think we can. I think we can have all kinds of a mix of emotions. But it's more about what we choose to focus on. Because, okay, we've got all these feelings. Which are we going to emphasize? Which are we going to feed? Which are we going to let guide our behaviors and our thoughts? We have all kinds of feelings, and I don't think any of them are necessarily bad, but we probably don't want to dwell on some as much. We want to focus on others. Chronic illness, chronic pain, whatever. It's a hard situation. I have to live with it. It won't go away. Mm-hmm. But perhaps along with that, if I could be grateful or if I could be optimistic or hopeful, I don't negate. It's still hard. Mm-hmm. It's still difficult. But somehow it makes it feel more meaningful. It makes it feel more doable. If we could also feel grateful, would that make the journey a little easier? So, I like the idea that life is a mixture of stuff.
Yep.
And most of it, we don't choose. But maybe we can choose, you know, good old agency can help us choose maybe the better part or the virtue that we can garnish our thoughts with.
Gratitude can certainly bless our journeys, but it's not just a matter of wanting it more. It starts with us looking for and expressing thanks for things. Dr. Worthen shared a great story about Corey and Betsy Ten Boom. They were two Christian sisters living in the Netherlands who were sent to a concentration camp during World War II for helping Jews escape the Nazis. And if you haven't read Corey's memoir, put it on your list. It's amazing.
Do you recall the story of Corey Ten Boom, okay. The hiding place? Anyway.
Oh, yes, the hiding place, yes.
Corey Ten Boom and her sister Betsy were in a concentration camp. They had read, I think, in Thessalonians something like, give thanks in all things. They're being moved to a new barrack, and it was flea infested. And Betsy said to her sister, remember, we need to give thanks in all things, even for this. And Corey said, how can that be? You know, but they tried. And they later found out because it was flea infested, the guards left them alone a lot and they could do more, read their Bible. They had to smuggle in a Bible and have discussions and they weren't as bothered because the guards didn't want to come in a flea infested barrack. So, you know, we'd say, well, that's an extreme kind of, right? But yeah, it's that idea that, oh, maybe we can see in almost every situation something to be grateful for.
Multiple things can be true at the same time. We can be suffering, sad, sick, and spent, but we can also be grateful. These realities aren't mutually exclusive. We don't have to bury one truth to experience another. And that's why the story of the Ten Boom Sisters is so poignant. Their gratitude for the fleas didn't make the fleas enjoyable. It didn't ignore the fact that they were in a concentration camp. It didn't absolve anyone for anything that was happening during the Holocaust. But gratitude made Corey and Betsy feel better. It was their lifeline in those barracks. It allowed them to penetrate the gray to see the grace that still surrounded them. Dr. Worthen said that seeing the good isn't a matter of make-believe. It's really just about our focus.
There's a negativity, what we call bias, which is we're sort of wired to detect threat. And so we automatically react to difficult and hard things, and hard things are known to sort of stay around longer. We think about them more. They have a larger impact on us. And if we go with that kind of thinking, then we say, well, if that's true, how we can ever be happy? Hard things happen. That's going to be more dominant. And we have evidence that typically we have more ratio of good to bad in our life. And sometimes we actually need to cultivate that. It's happening and we may not be seeing it, or we can actually cultivate more of it. And so gratitude is that ability to this broader sort of, let's see if we can shift to a more positive mindset, which leads to an upward spiral. You've heard of downward spirals, negative and, and go downwards. Well, this is the upward spiral. Yeah.
We may be biologically programmed to notice the bad more than the good in our lives and think hard things are winning, but the numbers don't bear that out. Now, that doesn't mean we should downplay our trials. They are real and they are heavy. But there are also things to be grateful for that are hiding in plain sight. It reminds me of those magic eye pictures that were really big in the 90s, where if you relax your eyes while looking at it, all of the sudden, another picture appears in 3D. The trick with those pictures and the trick in life is just adjusting our eyes to see what we might not notice at first glance. Dr. Worthen says that one of the ways that we can start to train our eyes is by doing a little thought exercise with ourselves. This can also work with our kids. It's called Rose, Rose, Thorn, Bud.
Rose, Rose, Thorn, Bud. I don't know if you've heard that before, but Rose, what's one good thing that happened today? What's another good thing that's happened today? What's something that's hard that's happened today? That's a thorn. And then the bud, what's something you're looking forward to? So it could be a practice like that where you're just talking about sort of the good and the bad and the things you're looking forward to.
I'm just going to jump in here in case that went by too fast. For this exercise, Dr. Worthen says, think of two things you're grateful for or roses. The thorn is something hard or bad that happened that day, and the bud is something you're looking forward to. Do you have any particular or favorite gratitude practices or techniques that you found are more helpful than others?
There can be all kinds. The most common are gratitude journals. Mm-hmm. Maybe you've even done gratitude journaling.
I did. And you know, I'll tell you, at the height of taking care of five kids and a dying husband during the pandemic, while I was working in a new career and a new job, it was pretty stressful. I was like, I'll do anything. I'll get sunlight, tell me what, you know, take my vitamins, take antidepressants, whatever, talk to a counselor, eat right, exercise, gratitude journal, sure, I'll do it. And I kind of rolled my eyes at it, honestly, like, yeah, sure, whatever. Oh, yeah, writing five things I'm grateful for at the end of the day, that's going to make whatever. Like, I just thought, I need all hands on deck. This is a crisis situation. And it had a profound effect on my life. Yeah. Profound.
I sometimes think it's small and simple things that produce great things. And I think gratitude in some ways is one of the small and simple, but it is actually a way to begin to build. If we're hoping to shift people to a more positive perspective, gratitude can be an emotion. It can be an experience. I think what we'd like to do is create it so that's more of a disposition or more of a virtue, more of a sort of a state of mind where we're in this store and we're being grateful to the cashier, and we're out and the postman comes by, and we say, thank you for coming by and delivering. We start to just live it rather than just experience it once in a while. So we're hoping to get maybe to that point where it's sort of more of that virtue that we really hold.
I really like that. Like you had said earlier, we do have this negativity bias. And I do think that you find what you're looking for. And one thing that keeping a gratitude journal, actually writing it down, mm-hmm. is I knew I was going to write it down because it was a habit, that small mm-hmm. and simple thing at the end of the day. So I found that I was either consciously or unconsciously looking for more things for the journal during the day.
It actually kind of makes you look for it more.
It does. Right? Yeah. Whether it's just automatic. And so you're looking for it more, you see it more. I saw a lot more.
Yeah.
And I tried not to repeat anything, which made it even more of a mental exercise.
Yeah.
But I think that there is something to that, that we do find what we're looking for. And if you're even just looking for it, even if it's not your disposition, that you're more likely to become that.
And maybe I should make the distinction. We can feel gratitude, but do we express it too? One thing to feel gratitude, you actually double its pleasure in a way if you get good at expressing it too. So expressing gratitude, not just feeling it, is a big deal. There is a specific exercise that we talk about, a letter writing exercise. You think about somebody in your life who you think you haven't really said thank you as fully as you would like to, a coach, a teacher, whatever. And you write out so that they have a copy of it that you leave with them, but you then read it to them so that there's this experience.
As a former teacher, I can tell you right now that favorite gifts to get from my students were thank you notes. Well, that and cold hard cash. Just kidding. But I will say that a thoughtful and sincere thank you note beats out baked goods and ceramic mugs any day. But Dr. Worthen says that expressing gratitude can be more than writing a note. It can also be just seeing people for who they are.
Something I started probably, I don't know, maybe it's been 10 years now, but I have a feeling that it's important that people are not objects. People are people. And so when I go through the cashier line at the store, I try to look for their little tag and I try to call them by name. So, Sam, Sally, how's your day? And it's my way to acknowledge them as a person. I don't know if it's gratitude, but it is me being grateful that they're there serving me. So I'm not necessarily saying thank you. Maybe I am in a way. So it's acknowledging that people are not objects. I'm trying to do the same thing with people that are homeless because we walk by them all the time. I'm stuck with, do I give something or not? Because I have policemen, neighbors who say, don't, that's not good. But I've decided that whether I give or not, maybe I should make eye contact because I'm wanting to recognize they're children of God like I am, and they deserve that kind of recognition. And if it's just eye contact, for me, it's that form of reverence for others, which I think is a form of gratitude in many ways.
Just a side note here, we tackled this topic of giving to the homeless in our Doing Good Better series. So if you're still wondering how to handle the panhandlers, give that a listen. I love Dr. Worthen's commitment to looking people in the eye, a simple expression of thanks that they exist. Dr. Worthen says another way we can show and feel gratitude for others is by studying family history.
Here's a thing that I've been discovering. People who research families and do family history work, guess what? They start to appreciate their ancestors and all the stuff that they did as they learn and discover them. And I think I need to get involved more in family history. But I hear others who do that begin to really feel a connection to and really appreciate.
A real gratitude for
great-great-grandma and great-grandpa and others that they've studied. And yeah.
My producer, Erica, was just telling me this week about a recent experience she had doing family history. She had a great Uncle Albert that no one ever talked about. The only thing she knew about him was that he had taken his life when he was about 50 years old. Everybody just called him the black sheep of the family and sometimes did that circular motion by their head signifying that he was crazy. And that was the end of the conversation. Well, after digging through the family histories of people who knew him, Erica discovered that Albert wasn't just mentally ill. He was a beloved and kind neighbor who helped out whenever he could. When the Spanish flu threatened to take the lives of the family that lived on a neighboring farm, they sent a letter to Albert begging his help. And when Albert received the letter, the boy that delivered it said Albert put out the fire in his fireplace, grabbed his hat and coat, and immediately set out to help the family. He stayed to nurse them all, cleaning their home and their soiled linens, making meals for them until the family regained their health. Even generations later, this family still speaks of Albert in reverent terms, even when his own family decided to not speak of him at all. Erica told me that she feels so grateful to know more of this story, to know that he was loved and that he's remembered by some for more than just his mental health battles. True to what Dr. Worthen said about family history making us more grateful, Erica says she feels all sorts of gratitude after discovering more about Albert. She feels gratitude for him, for his neighbors, for the people who took the time to write the story down, and she even feels more gratitude for her own story, one that has never seen the things that Albert struggled with. Now, if you're like me, you're already thinking about all the things that you want to tell your kids about gratitude because they have to know how important it is. So I asked Dr. Worthen how we can best teach our kids to be more grateful.
What kind of advice do you have or do you give to parents who are trying to cultivate this attitude of gratitude? Is there a way to teach it effectively?
By example?
Other than just saying, just do it. You guys, the way that I would do it is like, my kids would roll their eyes and be like, Mom read an article, she did in a podcast. And I was like, look, this is science. It's not just me. This is going to make you healthier and more spiritually in tune and emotionally and mentally sharper. They'll be like, yeah.
They shake their head, yeah.
Mom read an article.
I think example is always the big one. If they see you being grateful to them, being grateful to others, I think they start to just osmosis, whatever you want to call it, they pick it up. And you can tune them in. Oh, they say something good about, she's such a great teacher. Oh, have you ever let her know that she's a good teacher? I think she might like that. Or, I'm really grateful for my friend. Oh, have you told your friend you're really grateful? So you can tune them in sort of a natural way rather than sort of just teaching as a lesson. Teaching as a lesson's fine.
Sure.
But the contextual part of having it be real right at the time probably makes it more
in real time. Yeah. Makes it a little bit more urgent.
And what if you're putting them to bed and you just sit with them and say, hey, tell me about a good thing that happened today. Maybe that just feels like you're not teaching gratitude, you're just tuning them into it, right?
Yeah.
I think a lot of times we can do it in a more natural way. There's nothing wrong with teaching a lesson on gratitude to your children, but it's that natural sort of in the moment that probably makes a bigger difference.
Keep it natural, folks. Just being more vocal in our thanks for our kids can go a long way to making gratitude a part of their conversation and mindset. And why not do a little rose, thorn, bud exercise with them from time to time? It's such a great idea and an easy one, too. I like to think that I'm good at expressing gratitude in front of my kids, but one thing I'm tempted to do is rush them into being thankful before they're ready. Dr. Worthen was quick to point out that the conversation needs to be well-timed.
There's a timing involved. When people are having difficult experiences, I'm probably not going to talk about gratitude right off the bat. I'm going to talk about what it's feel like to experience trauma or experience a loss or whatever, and appropriately then begin at some point to introduce the idea of what are you learning from this? What kind of experiences might you take away from this?
Yeah, not right away, right?
Right.
But at an appropriate time.
Yeah.
I appreciate you bringing up this idea of timing.
Yeah, because we want to mourn with those that mourn, right? And that's not doing gratitude. That's sitting with them in their own discomfort and pain. And so I think gratitude does have a timing to it.
So for somebody going through a hard time, and you know, you've done all this research on gratitude, what's mm-hmm. your advice on that for your loved ones when you see people and they're looking to be grateful and maybe that's just not their default and they're like, okay, the time has got to be right and I got to choose it, but oh, that seems overwhelming.
Yeah, to some degree, it's watching and paying attention to feedback. So if you try to talk about gratitude and they're having a poor reaction to it, like you're not honoring their pain, then I think, okay, back off and go with their difficulty and challenge. And we're not wanting to push them prematurely. Let them discover. But sometimes we can say a little invitations like, well, what do you think you're learning from this? I don't know what that'll bring out.
No, you don't, because you're there in the moment with the person.
But often the learning is actually pretty positive in some way. Mm-hmm. I'm learning that I can handle things I didn't think I could handle. Yeah, I'm discovering that there's a lot of people who are willing to support me. So if you start to just make them curious about things that are happening. Do you think there's any growth that you're experiencing out of this yet? Or is it mostly loss? And then at some point, if they're religious, you're going to say, do you see the hand of the Lord in this at all? You're wanting to invite that reflection and thinking. But I'm all about being attentive to cues that they're giving me and not have an agenda about what I'm trying to do with them.
There is always a place for gratitude, but there is also a place for pain, and knowing when to honor them both is really important. Pushing our loved ones towards gratitude when they're not ready may not only make them resentful of the idea, but of us. So paying attention to cues and being curious is a good way to know if that gratitude conversation could or should happen in that moment. I also think it's important that we check our own motivations before we enter these types of conversations. If we want to hear others express gratitude about a hard situation in order for us to feel more comfortable with it, then maybe we should wait a little longer to broach the idea of gratitude so we can be fully present and unconditionally supportive for those that we love. At the beginning of this episode, I told you we'd hear some inspiring stories of real people expressing gratitude. Well, this last story is one I saved for the end because I find it especially touching.
A young man that we knew died in a single car wreck. It was a tragic thing for an 18-year-old to pass away. Went to the funeral because we knew the family and knew him. And those parents demonstrated gratitude in ways that you would not expect. The father was unemployed, had been for 8 months. And his perspective was, maybe this was a blessing that I was unemployed because I got to spend more time with him. And then his mother was reflecting on all the time she spent in the car driving him to clogging events and other kinds of things, and said that was a cherished time for her. So those are all expressions of gratitude in their own way in a tragic experience.
Oh, yeah.
So gratitude is a way to treasure others, and gratitude is the path to peace.
I sit and wonder of these parents who can look at such an awful situation and still find spacious corners of gratitude to sit in. It doesn't bring their son back or erase the pain of losing him, but that gratitude gave them a handhold of hope. It's magical, really. I experienced something similar while losing my late husband, Christopher. That gratitude journal of mine didn't change my circumstances, but it changed my vision so that I could see more than the immense loss in front of me. Gratitude is the path to peace, and I love that. And not only can gratitude give us that peace, but it can bless every other aspect of our lives too. It's all about our focus and not letting the negative bias blind us to everything good that there is to see. So whether that's doing rose thorn bud exercises each day, or writing in a gratitude journal, or studying family history, or simply taking the time to acknowledge those around us for who they are, practicing gratitude can help us lean into that peace. I know it's not always easy, nor does it come naturally. In fact, carving a space for gratitude may be the hardest and most intentional work you or I do. Being grateful doesn't cancel out any of my deep pain or silly pet peeves, but it stops that negative spiral long enough for me to breathe in some hope, knowing that blessings are everywhere.
The Lisa Show is a production of BYU Radio and is hosted by Lisa Valentine Clark. This episode was produced by Erica Price with help from Becca Hurley-Lung, Blake Morse, and Kenny Mears, with post-production by Gracie Davis. A special thank you to our guest, Dr. Vaughn Worthen. He's a clinical psychologist, professor, and director of counseling and psychological services at Brigham Young University. Don't miss out on two other great podcasts from the Lisa Show family, The Council of Moms and Proofread, a new book review podcast to help you read more of what you love. You can find The Council of Moms and Proofread on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for your messages. We read them all, and thanks for listening.
I want to recommend another BYU Radio podcast you're going to love. It's called Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us. It's brand new, and it has video as well as audio. So if you're someone who wants to engage with others on important topics but aren't sure how, or maybe you're burned out on social media and wish you could bring some humanity back into the discussions online or in real life, then Uncomfy is just for you. You'll hear stories of real people in challenging moments who chose to stick with the discomfort. And in the process, they healed their communities or learned to talk about what really matters to them or simply started to view others with more empathy. Isn't that what we all need? You can do it too. New episodes of Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us, drop every Wednesday. And you can listen or watch on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.